You're listening to the Experience Points Podcast, episode number 177 for the week of June 27th, 2012.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points Podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
My name is George Alborg.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, the website dedicated to the serious but not humorless analysis of video games and culture. And you know what? We like Journey. We like Journey a lot.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. I'm getting like a tattoo. I'm getting a tattoo tomorrow on my lower back.
Well, the real question then is, how long is the scarf going to be?
It's going to get longer with every year. Every year. I'm going to add like add a on. Like, it's just going to go round and round my legs.
Bruce is like, George, what's that on your face? Well, the scarf's working its way up. I don't know. We like that game company a lot. It feels like that game company within the past, like, what, 5 years or something has, like, become one of my favorite studios ever.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I think it's like, to the point where, like, if I met Genova Chen on the street, I might be a little bit fanboyish. You know? Like, I can keep my thing, I can keep my excitement for the games industry under wraps because I'm a deeply cynical person at heart. but with that game company, you know, it's bordering on fanboy territory.
So you can imagine our reaction when we saw an Edge column written by Stephen Poole titled "Journey's Ending is a Cop-Out."
Yeah.
And he writes an article about why he didn't like the way that Journey ended. It brings up some interesting points too that are more broadly applicable to that game company's work, and also maybe the way video games end and are structured, and the kinds of messages they convey in general.
Yeah, particularly artistic games, I think.
Yeah, and like what is the tension between how artistic games convey their message and how does that change once they become an actual interactive experience rather than just a message?
Right, exactly.
So, you know, and I like the article, even though I don't necessarily agree with it, obviously.
Obviously. We love Journey so much.
It's the perfect game, you know, of course. 11 out of 10, experiencepoints.net. but we should talk a little bit about his argument in general, I think.
Right.
You know, first off.
So we should say that the specific point that he thinks the game should end, right? This is really the important question. Where should the journey end? Right. And in his opinion, before we should stop here.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. We almost violated a sacred rule. Spoiler alert for the ending of Journey.
Yeah, it's there's no getting around it. I mean, the entire episode is about it, so...
That being said, if you're listening to this and you haven't played Journey, you need to go find someone's PlayStation 3 to play it on ASAP. Just come to our house. Give us a holler. If you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, I will let you come to my house and play Journey. All right.
A nominal fee.
Arcades are dead. Why not revive them in my living room? Back on topic.
All right, Stephen Poole's argument.
Spoiler for Journey. He thinks that the game should end when your character ostensibly dies in the snow. Right? Mm-hmm. And he's saying, basically, that all of the bits that happen after it are selling out to the very concept of this game being about the journey that matters, not achieving some transcendent goal, right? Mm-hmm. This game isn't about the ending in the way that a lot of games are, right? You're not saving the princess. You're not supposed to be finding the golden orb of destiny and bringing it back to your family and your village, right? The whole idea, the philosophy behind Journey, you could say, is that what's important is that you made this journey at all, not that you achieved success.
Right.
And that by having that capstone upon your experience of flying through the lush paradise and going towards through the light, that is selling out that very concept because you were rewarding players.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a somewhat interesting argument, actually, because can you imagine how, like, what a punch to the gut that game would have been if it just stopped after you collapsed like that?
Well, it's kind of strange because I'm sure I'm not the only one who genuinely thought that the game was ending at that point.
I mean, they hold a long time on that. They fade to white, and then there's like a good couple seconds where you're just staring. And a couple seconds in a video game is kind of an eternity.
Right, you know? Exactly. And not only that, like, you know, there's a distinct arc in the game as you enter the snowy area that takes the tone and just shifts it completely, right? You stop right. going from long jumps and movements to really trudging your way up this mountain. And that last scene in particular, when you're crawling up that hill, takes a very long time. It's probably, what, like 4 to 5 minutes of you not really flying at all.
And plus, it's almost cyclical in a way. You know, you start off the game with no powers. You're just kind of walking around. And then you're ending the game with no powers in an even more compromised position. But you have, you know, in the middle of the game, you have, you know, the height of your power.
Right.
And then you end the game. But then again, you know, after it fades back in, you realize that, you know, everything has been granted to you once again.
Right.
You know?
But I guess one of my major points of disagreement here is that I think that during that scene when your character is slowly trudging up the hill, I think that's the time for you to be okay with it. Like, that's time for you to rationalize in your head, well, yes, this game might end here and I might die. Is this okay? You
right.
know, like, and at least for me, and I think a lot of other players, we got to that point where the character passes out. We thought that the game was genuinely going to be over and we were okay with it. So mm-hmm. at that point, doesn't the game achieve what Stephen Poole wants it to achieve already?
I mean, like, his point is that it's... He has a really funny line where he says that for a second, like, he thought Journey was going to be the best game ever. And it was like, and it was like at that point where, you know, he thought it was just going to end on that very ambiguous, if not downright depressing note.
Right.
And then it undercuts it. Like, that's the real betrayal that he talks about in the article.
Yeah.
Like, it undercuts this idea that it cheapens it, basically.
I could see that.
Like, it really exists.
You know, and again, I said this when we first had the podcast about Journey, but I feel bad for him. Like, I want everyone's experience with Journey to be perfect, and I get it. Like, I see how we could feel that way, sure.
Right. I mean, I think the reason why I don't, you know, I definitely respect the opinion. The reason why I don't share it is that I think if you pull out even further, it does do a similar thing, just on a less depressing note. Like, you know,
yeah.
you finish the walk up the mountain, and then you go into like the paradise, and you get like a glimpse of what it would have been like if their society would have been able to survive, basically.
Yeah.
But then, you know, the game ends, and you end up at the exact point that you began.
Right.
You know, it's not like it's a necessarily happy ending, because nothing has really changed, you know? Like, it's just a story,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah, and I think that, for the most part, if you play the game again, that same theme is compounded upon, because you are seeing that world again, and you are going through it again. It's easy to say, oh, well, the concept of Journey is such that, the game concept itself is that you do have a beginning and a middle and an end, and therefore it does not actually adhere to its own philosophy. But if you play it again, I think it's quite the opposite. Like, you really are experiencing it over and over again, and there really is no end to that story. It really is all about the journey, because you don't have that classic three-arc structure when you're playing a game theoretically endlessly.
Right. You know, you can... You pull back even further, essentially, and you see an infinite loop,
right.
you know? And then there's other, you know... Have you read any, like, you know, analysis on it? Like, some people are going with... like the Mass Effect argument, like they think the paradise scene is like a hallucination, basically.
Yeah.
Which I thought was like a real bummer when I first read it, because yeah. I didn't really interpret it that way, and I was like, oh.
Yeah, I don't interpret it that way either. But
they're,
you know,
dead.
Whatever way you want to interpret it, that's fine by me. I'm not going to Jonathan blow you here or anything.
Well, hey now, family podcast.
You know, one of the other things that I was surprised by is I feel like a lot of the game does emphasize that the journey being the important thing. And there are two particular touches that I really like that I feel like, you know, the game's allowed to veer from that every now and then. And I could see that being a veering point. But for the most part, it holds true, right? Like, there's the scene when you see a tapestry that shows you where you've been and where you're going. That perfectly captures, I feel like, that same theme without having to necessarily change the entire game structure from the normal beginning, middle, end. that we normally get. And the same mm-hmm. goes for the very, very end when the camera's going through the world that you've been through, right? The point... So at some point at the very end of the game, the character or two characters go through the light. Who knows what happens to them at that point, right? Yeah. But the camera doesn't follow them through. The camera, in fact, goes backwards and shows you all of the places that you've been. That's a time for you to reflect on your journey, not to think about where your character's going. Mm-hmm. You know, so I never saw that as like, this is a cop-out in any way, because the game is still asking us to think about that. Even if it mechanically cannot, it's at the very least suggesting that we do that thought process and think of it as a journey.
I mean, I wonder if that you bring up that it still fades to white and the camera doesn't follow the characters into the, you know, oblivion or whatever that they're walking into.
Right.
You know, because it's basically the same thing as what happens in the snow collapsing part.
Yeah.
You know, they're going someplace that you can't follow, essentially, and you have to think about it. And then, you know, you go through the paradise and then the same thing happens. But the way that it's framed is much more joyous. And so, you know, did that make you more open to reflection rather than just, you know, would that make a player, I guess, more open to reflection than just like resenting it? Like, oh, all of this was for nothing.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I think it does, personally speaking. But I mean, I freaking love the game. So, you know, to go into the spiritual realm, and I know a lot of people have read Journey as a spiritual experience. I think there's something to say for the game ending unambiguously where you just die in the snow and you mm-hmm. know that they died, and then you're forced to find value in the journey even though your character is dead. And mm-hmm. the more agnostic approach where you have no idea what really happened. They could have died in the snow. Like you said, it could all be a hallucination of someone on death's door, or right. maybe they went through the light and there's some heaven and that they went beyond, but we can't be sure because the camera doesn't follow them anymore, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that, as you know, maybe as some agnostics say, I think that there's some form of bravery in not knowing but still choosing to look back and try to find value in that, you know. Mm. Like, we don't need a solid conclusion from the game, and I don't think it's provided by showing the character fly through this pseudo happy waterfall world.
Right. And I think that's one of the lesser mentioned portions of Journey, which is that it's not, of course, it is a game about a quest and doing it for the sake of embarking on it, but it's also a game about what it means to simply remember something instead of fix something or prevent or alter something.
Yeah.
You know, like it's a time capsule of the game's a time capsule or, you know, a interactive memory of this race that basically destroyed themselves.
Right.
But you don't really ever fix any of that. You know, all it is you remember and you see their mistakes and you live through it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, like you have to learn from that experience.
Right, and learning from that experience is external to the experience itself. Like, you're not going to ever fix that thing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, again, like my reaction was...
So the Journey sequel.
Yeah, Journey 2. This time it's personal. I mean, I think the betrayal that I felt at the end of Journey, and you brought this up when we first talked about it, you know, months ago, was that you don't get to control the rebirth sequence yeah. during the credits.
Yeah.
Which is like, for me, it's somewhat of a philosophical thing, because you could do that in both of the previous That Game Company games, but mm-hmm. it's also, I felt like I wasn't completing the last leg of the journey almost.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
getting back to that sand dune.
Well, maybe that's it, though. Like, you know, who knows whether or not that, like, Sprite is really the same character per se.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So maybe the whole point is to have the journey not be in your hands, because that's the whole point. That at some point you have to leave that journey behind.
Well, I mean, and that's where we get into, you know, how to convey that sort of thing in a video game. Because I feel like we've talked about this in like, roundabout ways in other discussions. It's kind of like the endless iPhone game problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, how do you have a game, you know, have a specific message, one that might not be necessarily like pleasant or you know, lend itself well to an endless medium like video games.
Yeah.
And still put it into one like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if the philosophy is that the journey is worth it rather than the destination, then shouldn't, like, Tetris be the ultimate expression of that?
Yeah, or, like, Journey the MMO or something.
Yeah, you know, yeah. like, does the very fact that it kind of has to end just by the way it's structured, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I feel like you could apply the same question to a lot of different aspects of storytelling. You know, like even the whole, you know, the hero's journey of taking what he's gotten and returning to a village or that you started with, right? This whole idea of you returning to where you began. Even Journey does a better job of it than a lot of other games when, you know, in most games, you are gaining in power, you're gaining in influence, and the world is changing according to your new gameplay abilities. Yeah. And so it's hard. You can't really return back to where you first started anyway. You know, so like if whether it be returning to where you initially started because you've changed so much as a player, how can you do that? And two, you know, having a game being about not having a clear ending, you know, being this open space, but it's still in a game format. Like, really, no matter what, both cases are such that it's hard to tell certain aspects of the stories when the experience of playing itself is so defined by a traditionally sort of linear beginning, middle, end experience.
What did the new game plus style options for Journey do to the story for you when you were playing it?
Yeah, you know, I think that, I mean, I loved it. What do you want me to say?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like, in a game where, you know, Stephen Poole felt betrayed by the, you know, by the second ending, if you will.
Yeah.
But, you know, there were certain parts of the game that I felt that if they really wanted to be brave about it, they could have just completely cut and just been like, well, tough, that's it. There's the game.
Well, you know? What?
Well, I mean, it's, to me, like, you can go back after you're done and revisit the game again, and it does, there are subtle changes that happen, like you add designs to your cape the more times you play it, and you can become the white robed figure,
right?
And so those are very video gamey type things to do after you are done with a game.
Yes, I can see that, but I think it added a lot of value even to the story, right? Like, as the white robed character, when you see someone who's white-robed, you have this presumption that they're so much more familiar with the game world themselves, right?
Right.
That they almost take on this spiritual tone. And then when you actually become the white character, I think that it can express to some extent that, yes, you are familiar with the lessons that this game has taught you, mechanically speaking, but then if you look at it from a philosophical point of view, maybe you learned, this character learned as much as they could and achieved some sort of transcendence from the experience, you know? Like, we see in the cutscenes this white character acting as a sort of guide to this other red character in the beginning. And so when you become that person in white, it feels to me like it does fit the story. Because if we're talking about the story of Journey being that the journey is more important than the destination, well then, at the very least, maybe it's not the destination, but it's the journey that changes you. And it changes you in a real way, if it's, you know, be it psychological or physical in the case of your cloak changing.
And the sad thing is that you're still stuck in the journey.
Yeah.
You know, like, even those white-robed figures, you know, transcend as they may, like, they're still doing the same path over and over again.
Although, but maybe it's a guiding path, you know? Like, maybe you're there for others to light their way, you know? Or or to just experience the experience again. Like, you know, who's to say that, yes, the story world seems to be one of ruin and apocalypse, but that doesn't mean that the individual story within those confines is a sad one per se.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, it's especially when all of this really gets tricky when you meet other people in the game.
Yeah,
because, you know, the idea that you might not ever see the person again after you collapse gets really powerful, or the idea that you know, become some de facto authority figure gets very strange. I told the story before, but one time I was running around as a white robed character, and the person that I was with, like, would only follow me. And so I had this, like, weird amount of responsibility where if I was just kind of being an idiot and, like, trying to test the boundaries of the world and seeing if I could, like, break through some of the, like, invisible walls and stuff like that.
Right.
And, like, they would follow me around, and I'm like, oh, wait a second, I'm making the game look terrible to you. Like, you're not really getting what I would hope one would get off of their, you know, just judging by their play style, it was probably their first playthrough, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a testament, though, to the good story that Journey does, given the confines of games, right? Like, we're talking about a variety of experiences here and different ways to interpret not only the gameplay experience, but the story experience. So like if you're stuck with something that is an artistic game with a non-traditional ending, how do you end it in a sort of traditional game setting? Well, make it vague, you know, make it like, you know, a lot of people really appreciated the Braid ending. And while there were some issues around, oh, well, it's too vague, right, for the most part, people enjoyed it quite a bit because it turned the game on its head without violating any of its mechanical rules it established earlier, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, this is, I think Braid is a perfect counterexample because that's a game not told in a linear storytelling way. Like, literally, time itself is working backwards and the story has to be told backwards as well. Mm-hmm. But you're still doing that in a traditional game environment in which you are slowly learning the mechanics in a linear way until you have a mastery over them.
But the funny part about Braid, unlike Journey, the ultimate expression of the time is still the end of the game. Like, for all its out of sequence chronology, Braid still reaches its conclusion at the normal place a story would reach a conclusion.
Yeah. But he does, like, doesn't the character move from one side as he goes to the door? Like, he comes back into the beginning area of the game. Like, it is looped, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, you get out. Yeah. I mean, it's very much like Journey. Like, you end up at the place where you started, but right, with all of the knowledge that you now have.
Right.
It's the game. The game ends at that ultimate scene right there. Like, it would be different if, you know, you had the princess scene and then you had a subsequent action scene instead of like a denouement, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you know there are some games where, you know, the way it ends feels, you know, different as to how you play the entire game up to that point.
Mass Effect.
I mean, you know, once you're gonna like fly and wake up on a sand dune somewhere, a shepherd.
Yeah,
I don't know. Are there any games that you really enjoy that besides Mass Effect 3 that the ending felt like somewhat of a betrayal of what the game was trying to do?
I don't know. I haven't thought about that. Let's see.
I mean, the one that I always come back, it's not a betrayal, but the one that I always think is really good is Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah, that is a great ending. I was just thinking, you know, I watched an old Western last night, and it made me think of Red Dead Redemption.
You're like, I wish I could just jump on top of that buggy right now.
Well, I mean, oddly enough, I was thinking about the ending. So I watched a film called Rio Bravo. It's a Howard Hawks film starring John Wayne.
Uh-huh.
And like a lot of old movies, they sort of just end. Like, I don't know if you notice this, but it's like someone will say something like a classic. Oftentimes it's a witty comment and everyone laughs and it's really weird. And then just the credits start rolling. Super abrupt. Whereas something like Red Dead Redemption had one of the best endings to a Western I've seen, period.
Right. Well, and also and to a game, like, it doesn't betray. It'd be hard to argue that it betrays its ludic message, because you're done in Red Dead Redemption, but you're really never done. In an open world game, you're never really done, and in an endless cycle of violence, you're also never really done.
Yeah, gorgeous. Oh, you know what? I do have a good example of a bad one. Trine, the first Trine, established. I mean, and this goes, I guess, into the difficulty space, and I guess it's hard to differentiate the two because in Trine, you know, you have this story about these three characters working together, and, you know, if you want to focus on the story at all. And then in the ending, it's just, for the first time in the entire game, it's a time trial of just platforming time trial, which you've never done before, and doesn't really make sense in the story thus far. And it was incredibly difficult, very frustrating, and it pissed a lot of people off. Like, that's a terrible way to end your game, to bring in mechanics that you're not experienced with.
And, I mean, that's the hard part about doing something like that for a game, because, you know, it's not necessarily a philosophical thing, but you're still trying to imbue that sense of accomplishment.
Yeah.
And so it's like you can do that through the mechanics, or you can do that through a very, you know, rewarding heaven level at the end, like Journey does.
I mean, this is the biggest problem with boss battles at the end of games, because most of the time in any game, you're not in a boss battle. You know, you're in a lot of other things. So to change the tone almost out of necessity and change the gameplay potentially can really tarnish an experience. You know, in fact, I was just playing, I forget what it's called, but it was an indie game on the 360 where you like flash through walls, this little alien guy.
Oh,
you know what I'm talking about?
Was it called Warp or Warp?
Yeah, or Warp or like Warp. One of those two. Yeah. That ending was very difficult, and it asked you to do things that you were not familiar with or that were not established during the regular course of the game. So, like, that's a really disappointing ending, because that's not how you want to finish an experience. And that's not how you want to remember an experience, you know? And to some extent, I think, like, Journey does a really good job of respecting the things that you've done. You know, in a way, in some ways, Journey's ending is a linear way to do the same thing that JRPGs do when they have like 80 endings, right? It's a way for them to respect your decisions and make you think about what you've done and feel proud that you've come this far, even if the story itself isn't going to be a happy one. I think they do want to reward players with something that shows them and reminds them what they've been through. You know, like, you're investing a lot of time in video games. I want to be reminded that what I've been through was valuable.
Right. And that's Steven's point in the article, you know, like, it's a great feeling to have that upswell at the end, but, you know, you make the trade-off.
Yeah.
In his opinion, obviously, you make the trade-off of what is maybe the most, what would feel like the most, I don't know, like, logically consistent versus what would make you feel good the best emotionally.
Yeah, but I think there's a difference between, like, me feeling as a player glad about my experience and me feeling happy for the story of the world, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I don't want to make the it's becoming trite comparison to, like, Schindler's List and the whole engagement versus fun thing, but I think it deserves mentioning here in that I can see something that's, you know, not a happy film or not a happy conclusion to a story or a character story in particular, but still feel satisfied by what I've been through, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, in some ways, people's response to Mass Effect 3 ending, for those who were happy with it, they felt that. They felt that, you know, Shepard's ending, and I won't spoil it here, fit their experience, and that the entire game was a denouement to them, and that it didn't matter what happened to Shepard at the end of Mass Effect 3. That feeling, I think, is exactly what a lot of games strive to do when they have multiple endings or when they have endings that remind you of what you've been through, whether or not you're happy with how individuals or stories came to their conclusion.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, a thought-provoking article, I think, that is, like, it's nice to see an article from someone that really enjoys the game yet isn't afraid of you know, being a little provocative, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, calling it a cop-out. The cop-out, that's a little provocative.
1 out of 10. I've revised my score of Journey.
Yeah, you know, it would be really interesting to know what Genova Chen, you know, thinks about his own ending to his games. And not just to that, but to Flower, you know, as well.
Right, right. I bet he would, just judging by the interviews and the writing that I've seen by and of about Genova Chen, he'd probably find this article, like, infinitely fascinating.
Yeah.
And, like, happy that it would spark something, you know, spark something as thoughtful, you know?
Yeah. Well, if I can pull myself away from praising him next time I see him, maybe I'll ask him.
Ask him, why is his ending such a cop-out? For those folks that want to write in, contact us, feel free, as always. experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And of course, we're very curious about endings that you've really liked or disliked, specifically as they relate to changing up the tone or the gameplay experience. Experiencepoints.net is the website. You can leave those comments in the comment section to this very podcast. We update the site Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday evenings. Come on by and bring your friends and Pop Matters, iTunes, etc., etc.
iTunes, the Twitters.
The Twitters, yeah, we're out there.
Everything. All right, until next time, everyone. Thanks for listening. Take it easy.
Bye-bye. Every time.